We interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the Delta Media Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Thursday to you. And it is a Thursday, February 27 edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. And you better believe we're ready to go today on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love hanging out at the Taproom River Ranch. And this place will have royalty in it in about an hour. Certainly, I'm not talking about myself. More on that in a moment. The famous Clint D with me for the next 2.5 hours. We're going to have some fun today. The first part, maybe not as much, unfortunately. We got to look back at an 81-66 LSU basketball setback. Tigers went to Gainesville, and they found it to be a house of horrors. It was over early, and now this LSU team, one that we wondered, did they start to climb out of the hole? They beat Frank Martin's South Carolina team in Columbia, scored 80-plus points in doing so over the weekend, and then one of the worst offensive outputs of the season. It was a story that I didn't want to believe in yesterday, Clint. I told you yesterday on this program, Florida lately has been scoring about 81, 82 in their three straight wins at home, and they've been giving up about 66, 67 in those same ball games. Well, I will be darned if that wasn't the exact outcome of this one. I really thought LSU's offense would pose some problems for Florida. I favored the Gators in this one. I had no inkling that Will Wade's group would be held under 70 points. And so all of a sudden, you take a look at the SEC standings, LSU, which has lost 5 out of 7 in a dead heat at this point with Florida. Both of them a game behind Auburn, and then everybody right now chasing John Calipari and the Kentucky Wildcats. UK 13-2 and a top 10 team in America. But here's the other bad news. Some other teams in the Southeastern Conference are creeping up on LSU and now on Florida. Mississippi State, South Carolina, both a game back. And so this one's going to be interesting, to say the least, coming down the stretch. I told you a couple of weeks ago, in the middle of this skid, if it gets to a certain point, now you have to sweat it. And you have to win at least one, probably two games to start feeling comfortable when you get to the SEC tourney in Nashville. We are officially wading in those waters. And the pun's absolutely intended with Will Wade. But if you were wondering, are we at that point yet? I'm here to tell you that we are. And the last time that we truly took stock of LSU basketball was right before that Kentucky game, Clint. Yeah, we've talked about them leading into South Kakalaka last night, going to play the Rowdy Reptiles in Gainesville. But here's a fact. When we took stock prior to Kentucky, I told you I thought that they had gone from being a 4/5 seed, probably closer to maybe the 8 line. Okay, they've lost at home to Kentucky. They lost at home to Florida, two of the other top quadrant teams in the SEC. The win against South Carolina is the only thing that has prevented this from becoming an absolute free fall. And even still, I'm going to tell you now that LSU, in my estimation, I don't need Joe Lunardi, my eyeball test, knowing the rest of the landscape in college basketball, I think LSU right now has to be considered somewhere between one of the last four in, maybe the first four out. I think they have officially drifted into that type of purgatory. And that means you have to sweat it out when you go to Bridgestone Arena. Couple of games left, obviously, and it starts back up Saturday when LSU takes on Texas A&M. It's an early start, kind of funky when you're playing at 11 a.m. on the road at Reed Arena. We'll see how that one goes, and then LSU finishes the season at Arkansas, tough place to play, and at home against Georgia, which is manna falling from the heavens. The Bulldogs and Tom Crean this year, 4-11. So LSU hoops right now, despite being 19-9 overall. I'd have told you 3 or 4 years ago, into the Johnny Jones era, beginning of the Will Wade era that you'd be disappointed that an LSU basketball team was 19-9 overall, 10-5 in the SEC? You looked at me funny. And I wanted to make sure to get that point in during our opening segment today. At the end of the Johnny Jones era, you would have jumped through hoops to be in this position right now. Wade, the program, the caliber of players that have been coming through it, have understandably and justifiably raised the bar. But right now, they're bellying under it. And right now, it's going to have to start with Wade if they're going to find their way out of this potential free fall that we're all witnessing. Last night, the offense went kaput, and LSU's defense isn't good enough for them to do that. LSU's defense isn't good enough for the offense to give them 75 points and anybody in the building feel comfortable. So last night, certainly, just a gut punch. One that maybe along with the road trip to Coleman Coliseum at Alabama, you could kind of understand. But if you were going to have those setbacks, you weren't going to be able to also withstand losing at Vandy, home against Kentucky. And so now this LSU team firmly on the bubble, which is something that doesn't make anybody feel comfortable heading toward the last few days of February. Clint, I made reference right at the onset that we've got some Olympic royalty that's coming soon to our program. And soon he will be Olympic royalty, but Mondo Duplantis, twice over in the last month, he has set the world record in the pole vault, 6.17 meters in Poland. A week later, 6.18 meters in Scotland. How high is that for all of you non-meters conversion people? How about 20 feet and 3 inches? Think about that. And he's only 20 years old. We're going to have him here along with the young man from St. Thomas More who is shooting his soon-to-be famous documentary, I'm sure, Brennan Robidoux. They're both going to be with us today, 5 until 5:30. I'm excited about this one. I think you should be as well. If you get a chance, come on out, join us, shake Mondo's hand, wish him well at the Tokyo Olympics that are coming up this summer. We're going to have a lot of fun today. Mondo Duplantis and Brennan Robidoux, who's been following him through hotels. I mean, this cat's been out there sleeping on floors around planet Earth for the last 3 years, watching events that you can't even find on television. This one's going to be a lot of fun. Mondo and Brennan coming aboard live from the tap room from 5 until 5:30. And leave it to me to bury our leadoff man, Hunt Palmer. He's in his typical spot. Between now and Mondo o'clock, Hunt's coming aboard at 4:30. We'll let him wallow in the misery of LSU basketball, but we'll spend even more time looking ahead to LSU baseball. Big trip to H-Town this weekend. Tigers get the tangle with Texas, Oklahoma, Baylor. What kind of competition is it, and what does Hunt expect? He'll tell you all about it at 4:30. So stick around. That's what's on tap as we're hanging out at the Tap Room River Ranch. And for good measure, we've got a tasty LSU NFL draft sink or swim question that's coming at you when we return. So the briefest of timeouts, and then Bumper to Bumper Sports is right back to the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
Whether he's sinking or swimming, Ben Love is just the guy to lead you in the right direction as you make your way back home from work. Now, back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
And we've got a doozy today. Our sink or swim question, all about LSU players going into the draft, and there's something like 58 of them, right? So you've got a wide berth to choose from today. But I'll get right to it, CD. And kind of like a question that we tossed out maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, I'm taking Joe Burrow out of this equation. Sorry, it's too easy. He's too good. Human cheat code at quarterback. So keep in mind you can't answer Burbank Joe for this one, but I think it's a good one. Which LSU player in this year's draft will make the best pro? Again, Burrow excluded. Give me your thoughts on this one. I'm interested. We've got some time to explore this one. We might get to a little more NFL Combine talk later in the program, but this, for our first hour, likely to be the only opportunity that we can go down this road. So again, which LSU player in this year's draft do you think will make the best pro? Call us up. Let us know. 706-01 1-1. Clint, I brought my manners today. You can go first.
I appreciate that, Ben. And for me, I'm going to go with Justin Jefferson. In my mind, the best Jefferson to wear the purple and gold in the history of LSU. And he's looked fantastic the last couple of years. So I wouldn't be surprised. I feel like, to me, especially in the league that is right now, where passing yards are that premium and you see those counting stats all the way around, I think Justin Jefferson could be similar to what we've seen with Michael Thomas on most franchises.
I think there are a couple of names that rightly jump off the page. Jefferson's one of them. If we start playing the game of who gets drafted out of this pool of players after Burrow, which LSU player goes second, I think most would assume that it's Grant Delpit. But my guess is that Delpit and Jefferson are probably the two that leap into the mind there. I also believe Caleb Von Chaisaw deserves some consideration in this question. I have been a guy over the last, say, 18 months, Clint, that has argued that Chaisaw sometimes fails to live up to the hype. I didn't know that he had enough muscle mass and that he was big enough maybe to make it at the next level. He came on and almost out of nowhere like a ninja the last two or three games of the season into the postseason. Chaisaw finished very, very strong. I still don't know for me if he's quite big enough, but the NFL these days, it's rewarding. Smaller, quicker, and a guy that maybe could play some hybrid type of ball. So I'm not going to bet against Chaisaw. But if we start to talk about players who had the biggest explosion down the stretch of the season, guys whose stock is skyrocketing the most, has to be Patrick Queen. And that's something we discussed yesterday when Luke Johnson joined the program. Luke's covering the combine in Indy, and we both pinpointed Queen as somebody who has a chance to really take it to the next level as an early entry at the linebacker position. So I've laid out some of the favorites there, Clint, and I think I'm going to land on Grant Delpit. And that may seem like a cop-out because, like I said, he's probably the next Tiger to go after Joe Burrow. Delpit, in a lot of ways, I think could be a better version of Jamal Adams, who's had a really good start to his career with the Jets. I've told you before on this show, I don't know that Jamal always plays the best team ball. I'm not sure he's always the best teammate. Those are my observations. Call it what you want. It's just what I've seen. Delpit, save a short stretch at the beginning of the season, was remarkable during his LSU career and really stepped into a lot of different roles. So I like his chances of sticking at the next level and being a really, really good pro. So I think I'm going to answer Grant Delpit, CD. The other name I didn't mention here, I didn't want to get accused of Homer Radio, but, yeah, my alma mater in Baton Rouge. Got to give some love here to Clyde Edwards-Helaire and what he could be as a running back at the next level. So, again, there are a lot of different ways you can go. There are other players I didn't even remotely touch on. I know people that think Thaddeus Moss is going to be a baller at tight end at the next level. But I'm going to tell you now, I think the answer is Delpit. If you force me to give a little bit of a sleeper that could be tremendous value where he's selected, I'm going either Patrick Queen or Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
I like that a lot, especially Clyde Edwards-Helaire. But for me, it's like Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to be a guy I think he'll do well. But I'm kind of bullish on just because of the last couple LSU running backs to go into the league just haven't had necessarily the Leonard Fournette had a beast mode start, but after that he's kind of slipped up. Darius Geis just can't get out of first gear. So I'd love to see Clyde Edwards-Helaire be one of those players that could be the best pro, but man, I'm not sold on it yet.
He is worlds different of a player, especially than Leonard Fournette. He's got some similarities. I know they went to the same high school. See, I told you. You'd accuse me of Homer Radio, but Geis and Edwards-Helaire went to the same high school. But other than that, I wouldn't say that they're carbon copies of one another, not even a little bit. Geis actually played wide receiver at his All-American game in San Antonio, and yet I wouldn't hesitate to tell you that I think Clyde is the better receiving option out of the backfield. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is one of the best ball-catching backs I've seen out of LSU in a long, long time. I mean, I'm not going to say anywhere ever because I don't want to disrespect Christian McCaffrey, and there have been others that have been elite at doing that. Alvin Kamara, clearly, I think fits into that type of mold, but what Clyde can do, it's impressive. Again, he's not the physical specimen that Fournette was. That's why he's not going to go top 10 overall. but I probably could tell you with a straight face that he's a more well-rounded back than the Booga Nation and not blush while telling you that. So, again, it's kind of what's your preference, who do you like, and why? Call us up and let us know what you've got on the subject. 706-0111. We're all watching the Combine. Heck, it's on here right now at the Tap Room River Ranch. So just curious, who's the best pro going to be out of this year's LSU mix? While I've got some time, Clint, I'll continue down the road of Justin Jefferson of the Saints, and nobody can take me off this path. And I'm glad that Luke Johnson echoed that yesterday as well. There could be a quarterback that falls to whatever, where the Saints at 24, could be a quarterback that falls to 24 that makes them at least have to think about it. Yeah, I accept that. Could be an offensive lineman that they want to pull the trigger on there. Kind of doubt it, because like Luke told us yesterday, they really need interior offensive linemen. And there probably aren't any pure interior guys in this year's crop that deserve to be first-round picks. And so, yes, if Justin Jefferson's there at 24, I don't know how they turn that down. Just the perfect complement, potentially, to what we've been seeing out of Michael Thomas. Because both of those guys are chess pieces that you can line up anywhere on the board. They both have great catch radiuses. They both run great routes, get separation. You can put them inside. You can put them outside. You pair those two with Kamara alongside Jared Cook for at least one more year at tight end. That's a pretty full deck for Drew Brees to work with. What happens after that? Yeah, we'll find out. But at a minimum, you're going to be looking at a future with Michael Thomas and Justin Jefferson in it. I think I'll figure the rest out. And how about it, Clint? Here we are talking NFL Combine, and, well, apparently Arsenal is playing a soccer game, footy-footy-football, and the people are cheering. So sometimes you got to come to the tap room to get this sort of action, brother.
Sometimes you got to get in on the footy-footy-football, especially whenever there's no football to be had outside of the Underwear Olympics.
You know that I'm a man who doesn't mind throwing down some shekels, right? You know that I'm a gambling man. If you would have told me when I woke up this morning, I would ask a question about LSU football and players in the draft, nobody would call in. Yet, we would find time in that segment to carve out for Arsenal football. That is a bet I would have lost. So I'm glad that you didn't pose it to me. And now that I think of it, I still owe you $2 from the other day's bet, don't I?
I should have gone double or nothing on this, Ben.
I'm telling you, you've always got that opportunity. But I got to tell you, now that they're replaying this goal, it's a golazo. See, I know a little bit of soccer terminology. We're going to call that a bicycle kick, gentlemen? Yes? Okay, thumbs up everywhere on the bicycle kick. So, all right, just checking in. Got the bicycle kick going here at the tap room. People excited about it. I've spotted at least one Colorado Rockies jersey already, so respect there. It's going to be a fun evening, I think, and we're just building up to all of it. We got Hunt Palmer that's coming aboard in about 6 or 7 minutes. Looking forward to talking some LSU basketball, some LSU baseball, and then the combo of Mondo Duplantis and Brennan Robidoux coming aboard at 5 o'clock. Very excited about that. Again, putting into perspective what Mondo is doing, it's impossible to do that. He broke his idol's record. A guy who at some point, as Mondo was coming up at the high school ranks at Lafayette High, he had this man's poster on his wall. This guy was the gold standard. And now at 20 years old, it's Armand Mondo Duplantis. So really pretty remarkable. Started pole vaulting at 3 years old, and you look at where he's at now. Olympics coming up in Tokyo this summer, and he is, no doubt about it, the front runner to win a gold medal. I understand. He'll be doing that for Sweden. I get that, right? Because of his mother's side, he had that option. And we may talk a little bit about that today. What's driven him in that direction, but he's competed internationally, I understand, for Sweden for quite some time now. Clint, since we have a little bit of extra space, since we have a scotch here, you brought forth some of our other clips over the years when we've had Mondo Duplantis on the program, and we got to bring this one out. This one always, for me, is just incredible. Live from the Beaver Club relays, I guess at this point it's been 2 years, and Mondo was a senior. He wanted to compete in the Texas Relays in Austin. And he basically said the LHSAA was trying to force him to resign and not let him compete in the state anymore. Don't let me tell Mondo's story. Here was him a couple years back at the UL track and field facility.
They contacted the National High School Association, and they're trying to not allow me to even compete in the elite division. I would have to compete in the high school division so that they wouldn't have to ban me. And that they kind of, so they want me to kind of resign before they have to ban me, pretty much.
What a boss. It didn't go down that way. Not sure how much that our show and that interview had to do with it, but the LHSAA, let's just say, bent the knee. Mondo Duplantis kept winning championships, and now the man is a world record holder. All in a few years' work, CD, at B2BS, and all in about 17 years of just unbelievably devoted work for Mondo. Looking forward to having him aboard. And Brendan Robidoux, who is making the Born to Fly documentary. They'll be with us here in about 33 minutes. Stick around. We'll take a brief timeout, and then we'll be back with Hunt Palmer. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live at the Tap Room River Ranch.
Been working all day just to make it to your daily fix of Ben Love. Boy, does that say something about your life choices. But since you want it, let's get back to more Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Back in, ready to talk some LSU hoops, a little LSU baseball as well, as we hang out at the Tap Room River Ranch. Waiting for us aboard the game hotline, Hunt Palmer. Hoops with Hunt Podcasting at 104.5ESPN.com. After last night, do we need to send out a search team for you, Hunt?
That was some kind of bad. And generally speaking, it happens at some point during the season. You just get your butt kicked, but wasn't a great time for it.
Tough place to play, no question about it. And it doesn't surprise, I don't think, anybody that LSU gave up 81 points, being held to 66. What about the offensive lack of outburst? How'd that happen?
It was just ugly. I mean, Michael White's teams are generally good defensively. Skyler was bad. Three consecutive possessions, he misses a dunk, misses a wide open three, and then airballs a layup. I mean, you saw consecutive times down the floor where Darius Days airballed a three, and then Andre Hyatt shot it off the side of the backboard. I mean, it was just, there was very little energy, bad shot selection. You know, they didn't execute at all. The only guy doing anything on offense was Emmett, but outside of that, You got five starters who generally score in double figures, and nobody did anything other than Emmett.
What do we make out of a team, Hunt, that right now at least would be secure with a bye in the first round of the SEC tournament but might be on the NCAA bubble? Is that accurate?
I think they're on the good side of the NCAA bubble right now. You go ahead and lose a couple of these quad three games at home that they've got, you got some issues, especially if you go to Arkansas and lose as well. But I think that if they take care of their business on their home floor against Texas A&M and Georgia on these coming Saturdays, that they'll be okay. But that's easier said than done. And the way they saw them play last night, you got to worry if they've kind of hit a wall with the depth and they're just tired. Maybe it was just a bad night. We'll see on Saturday.
Talking LSU hoops right now with Hunt Palmer on 103.7 The Game. Further injuries, it seems, to Charles Manning. What's that going to do to the depth?
Well, it hurts. You're playing with about seven, and they should get out there and play a little bit in the second half last night. And Will Wade said, well, you know, it's that three he threw in. I mean, he does that in practice all the time. He plays great. We just haven't had a chance to get him in, and I'm kind of going, wait a second. You've seen a guy that's been playing great in practice all the time, and you've got a limited guard rotation, and he's played 3 minutes in conference play all year. I don't know about that, but they've got to get him some minutes because you just can't. At this point in the season, as many minutes as Skyler and Javonte have played, you just can't keep asking them to go 40 minutes, 38 minutes. Bishop's got to be able to come in with something. And I thought he was okay last night. He played hard. He looked pretty quick out there. He didn't play timid like some people do when they get in and don't feel like they belong out there because they haven't played very much. He went out there and played. He put some shots up. He tried to defend. He attacked the rim. I mean, he's not going to be one of their best players, but he's got to be able to go out there and give them 8, 10, 11 minutes. And I thought last night was the first time at that, and we'll probably see him again early in the game on Saturday.
We'll flip it over to LSU baseball. And when LSU heads to Houston, I guess give our listeners, Hunt, an idea of the competition that they're going to encounter. Texas, Oklahoma, Baylor. How's that going to help get it ready for SEC play?
Absolutely a step up in class here. You got an undefeated Texas team that went to Rice and swept what looks like a pretty bad Rice team, but they did sweep them on the road. They're unbeaten. They've got a guy in Bryce Elder that LSU will probably see tomorrow night, who they saw last year, Elder last year in the game, worked into the seventh inning, only didn't give up an earned run, struck out, I think, seven. Is a big ground ball guy, big, strong right-handed pitcher. It'll be tough on him tomorrow for sure. So it's a solid Texas team, likes to run a lot. Baylor is, record-wise, not great. They've got a shortstop who's a potential All-American, really good player. I think they're probably the weakest of the three teams that LSU will play. And then Oklahoma is a ranked team and a team that has according to Kendall Rogers, who I talked to this week, has a great 1-2 punch atop their rotation. Question is, those guys throw on Friday and Saturday, and then LSU sees a lesser guy on Sunday. We'll see. But I think for sure a step up in class for the last couple of weekends, especially on the mound tomorrow. I expect an unbelievable atmosphere tomorrow with the two biggest fan bases that will be there in LSU and Texas. Couple of guys who will be nice draft picks this coming up draft, and Cole Henry and Bryce Elder. Should be a crazy environment in there.
Coming down the stretch with Hunt Palmer on 103.7 The Game. How encouraged should we be, Hunt, with the pitching performances of Marceau and Labus last weekend against Eastern Kentucky?
Yeah, I thought they were good. You know, Marceau didn't walk anybody. He missed some bats, which he didn't do the first week. Was able to throw that tight slider that he's been working on and get it under some bats and strike some guys out. The stuff's always been there for Landon. It's just a matter of executing it, and I think his stuff's a little bit better this year because he's tightened up that breaking ball. So that was good for Labus to kind of finish and follow that up and work seven and throw the change up the way he did. I thought was excellent. So like, I think LSU's starting rotation's in good shape. It's just a matter of can they play defense and can they hit.
LSU beats La Tech last night. Anything really jump out at you about that win at the box?
I thought the arms looked good, especially the two lefties. I thought that the freshman Hasty came in, and he's got a lot of potential from the left side. And he struck a couple of guys out with a plus breaking ball that I really thought was good. I thought the outfield defense with the Giacomo and Hampton running balls down a little bit was good. Of course, everybody will look at Mo Hampton and getting a couple of base hits. One was kind of a player to left field for a double, but he hit it sharply through the left side for a base hit as well. So I really like Zach Mathis in the leadoff spot. You know, the days of just plugging in your fastest guy at the leadoff spot and that's your dude are over. You need a guy that's going to give you a tough at bat, get on base, create some traffic on the bases. And I think Mathis is really that guy for LSU right now. I think that looks good. I think they have enough bats behind him with Cabrera and with Beloso and with Garza. And hopefully Milazzo continues to hit. I think they've got enough guys who can hit behind them to put Mathis up there at the top. So, you know, it's one game in a midweek against Tech, but I thought they played well.
All right, one more for you, Hunt, on the way out, and I'm glad you mentioned Alex Milazzo. Knowing what LSU's had behind the plate in recent years, how do you liken him to those guys? How is he different than recent LSU catchers?
Well, the last couple of years, it's not even close. Since Papirski's left, you had a year with Hunter Fiducia back there most of the time. Kind of a banged up Garza back there at times last year. You know, you're kind of struggling to figure out who was going to play there. He's behind the plate as good a defensive guy as they've had them in Arriere. I would put him right in the category with Ty Ross and Papirski, and probably better than both of those guys defensively. And in terms of swinging the bat, we just don't know. Sure, he's gotten a couple of really nice hits, and you know, that's been nice to see. But this is early against subpar pitching. We'll see how he handles probably some better arms this weekend. I think that right now they like the look of him back there. When you've got a pitching staff that has some plus breaking balls and wants to strike people out, you need the confidence to bury those things, and I think Milazzo gives them that. You don't necessarily want a guy back there that's going to hit 197 if you can avoid it, and I don't think Milazzo is that guy, but you don't know yet at this point. If he is that guy, you might have to look at giving Garza a start here or there, but especially tomorrow against a Texas team that really likes to run and has run a good bit early on in the season, I fully expect Milazzo to be back there, and he will slow that running game down. He's impressive catching and throwing.
Hey, amigo, speaking of baseball, opening day in the show is a month from yesterday. Where's your meter right now, 1 to 10?
You know, I think a little while ago, it was probably a month ago, it was probably at like a 4 or 5 because the Cubs just haven't done anything. But I'm starting to get irrationally confident, and by the time they ramp it up, I'll be at a 9 or 10. That's just inevitable. It's the way it's going to go. But I kind of understand the Cubs have taken a couple steps back from where they were a couple years ago. But look, baseball is good. I love having it in my life every single day, which is what Major League Baseball, if you're a fan, it gives you. They're there just about every day of the week, and I'm ready for that.
Appreciate you, man. Enjoy the rest of your evening. Talk next Thursday.
Have a good weekend, Ben. Thanks, man.
Hunt Palmer. Got to listen to his podcast. God knows what he's talking about with LSU Hoops, 1045ESPN.com. And again, the podcast, Hoops with Hunt. Perfectly said, by the way, at the end there. Irrationally confident. That's a Cubs fan for you. And he's been hanging around LSU fans for all of his life as well. Might just double down is a good way to describe faithful to the purple and gold. It might. You may disagree, but that's not bad at all from Hunt Palmer. All right, we're going to head into our final time out of the 4 o'clock hour. Call us up, and we'll keep talking a little bit of NFL Combine, see if we can get you some of the latest from Indy. But you can participate at 706-0111, and we're still on track to have Mondo Duplantis and Brennan Robidoux in the building at 5 o'clock. So stick around. Bumper to Bumper Sports, coming right back in to the Tap Room River Ranch.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
Right back at it, as we're having a blast today at the Taproom River Ranch and less than 15 minutes away from Mondo Duplantis alongside Brennan Robidoux. Excited to have him aboard the show. But we exited stage left, CD, our last segment discussing the NFL Combine, a tease that I'd come back into it today, the quarterbacks, wide receivers, and tight ends all working out. In fact, the TV that I'm looking at here at the Tap Room's got Joe Burrow on it, who's not working out, but he's laughing it up. He's on the sideline doing exactly what Joe Burrow should be doing right now. A few things of note. I forget about this guy. He was a monster coming into turnstiles at LSU, but wide receiver – turn tight end, Stephen Sullivan. Clint, he recorded a 4.63, a 40-yard dash. Right now, that's the fourth fastest time for a tight end at this year's NFL Combine. Checked in at a shade under 6'5", 248 pounds, and an 80-inch wingspan. Yikes. And since we're talking about LSU tight ends, some of the measurables are treating Sullivan well. Not exactly so. When it comes to Thaddeus Moss, he's got another setback. The medical tests at this year's NFL Combine have revealed a foot injury that will require surgery. He's going to be sidelined another 6 to 8 weeks. And so Thaddeus Moss currently dealing with injuries. Stephon Sullivan may be reminding folks that he deserves an opportunity in the show. And it's certainly been an interesting couple of hours and days at the NFL draft. One guy that we forgot about, Clint, we asked our sink or swim question earlier, which non-Burrow LSU player in the draft will make the best pro? Christian Fulton certainly deserves consideration. Easy to get swept up in how unbelievable Derek Stingley Jr. was as a freshman this year. But K-Baby, Christian Fulton, having to stick around after all the things that happened to him, left Rummel High School, and eventually I think he's turned himself into a first, maybe, early second round pick. But now we have an opportunity to let you hear a little bit from the Combine in Indy. I mentioned Cale Von Chaisson as someone who is obviously being monitored by everybody who wants a pass rusher in this year's draft. And, well, the junior out of the Houston, Texas area wasn't shy today. When he took his turn at the mic, he told reporters he thinks he's the best doing it in this year's crop.
I know I'm the most valuable player in the draft. I mean, as far as when you're starting up a business, do you want to hire people who speak one language or you want to hire people who speak three languages, three or four languages? A lot of players in this draft that you can feel like we're in the same position, they are a one-dimensional player, and once you stop their game, it's kind of a less impactful person. And I feel like if any way one of my games ever get stopped, I got three or four of the games that impact the game very well.
Do you want a guy who could speak multiple languages? Hey, I like the comparison. I really do. And if he's right, he's going to be a very, very rich man. And I mean sooner than later. An interesting day. A lot of quarterbacks opting not to throw. In the case of Tua Tagovailoa, still injured, right? So you're not worried about seeing him today. Joe Burrow, understandably, opting out of a lot of those type of activities. But we're starting to see a little bit just which guys are making the climb and which ones, well, it just may be a while. And speaking of guys making the climb, Clint, I keep talking about Patrick Queen. I'm going to start trading in that guy's name as if it's currency here shortly. Queen told reporters today at the Combine that he's been getting feedback that has him as a mid to late first round guy. I'm seeing where at least one of the NFL prognosticators, I believe it's Daniel Jeremiah, right now has him up there in his top 20 overall prospects. Is there really a possibility that this guy we've been hyping up as a sleeper could end up being a first-round draft pick? I'll take that as a yes, CD. But, yeah, so we'll see exactly how high that Patrick Queen can fly. Unbelievable. He wasn't even considered a professional prospect this year. Had an incredible finish to his season. What he did against Oklahoma in the national semifinal, Clemson in the championship game, and now all of a sudden Patrick Queen out of Livonia has got a chance to be a first-round pick. And so LSU players working out right now. We've got guys that continue to make their case. Joe Burrow, his resume is already on tape, so he's not going to throw at the combine. Don't think he needs to either. Got one other interesting bit of sound, Clint. As we switch gears here, this is intriguing. Mark Berman, and this would be Channel 26 out of the Houston area. Paul Maneri and the Tigers are already in Houston. They're getting ready for the Shriners Classic. And when LSU skipper met with the media, understandably, he was asked about Alex Bregman. Look, Maneri's been on this show, even at LSU's media day. He has been, I mean, staunchly backing his guy, as you would expect, Alex Bregman, saying, I know his character. There's no way that he would cheat. I don't know that this video clip that Clint's currently extracting sound from, and this is hot off the presses, I don't know that this is a complete about-face, but it certainly is interesting. So, Clint, if we're ready to roll with that, this is what Paul Maneri said earlier today in Houston about Alex Bregman.
Well, you know, I've talked, you know, privately with Alex about it, you know, a little bit, and, you know, it really hurts him. He feels a lot of remorse about a lot of things, but you have to remember, too, that when all that stuff happened, Alex had only been in the big leagues for 2 months. He wasn't really in a position to step forward and say, you know, I'm going to be different than everybody else, and I felt for the kid, you know, because it's always been important for him to be a part of the team and be accepted by his teammates and show respect to his coaches. And I just think he was kind of put in a tough position. And I can tell you right now that that's not Alex. Alex is not a person that looks for shortcuts. He's always done things the hard way. His work ethic, his, you know, commitment and so forth. And so, you know, he'll get through this. It's going to be a tough time for him, and it's going to be something that'll, you know, people will always remind him of. But I know what the character is of this young man, and he'll fight his way through it and try to win people back just by his sure dedication and love of the game.
See, that's interesting from Maneri. And what it tells me is this experience is already bringing some humility to Alex Bregman, like it is everybody in that Astros organization. Bregman's one of the most confident players I've ever seen. It can border on arrogance. You call it what you want, but the guy's a flat-out stud. He is. I think this experience may, again, be one of those things that knocks you down that humility ladder, and we all have them in life. And that sounds like Bregman has confided within Maneri that, yeah, you know, I got there as a rookie. They had this system that was in place, and who was I to say no? Interesting. Again, it's just not exactly what we heard from Paul the first time around. So I think some more in-depth conversations have transpired, and there you have it. LSU getting ready to take on Texas, Oklahoma, Baylor over in Houston at the Shriners Classic, and that's a good job by all the reporters out there in H-Town trying to get the latest from Maneri regarding the Houston Astros. All right, we are 1 hour down. We got a great half hour coming up. In fact, our guys just got here. I'm told that they battled a flat tire. I'm glad that they survived that. We're going to have Mondo Duplantis, Brennan Robidoux in the building. Come out if you get a chance and see him at the Tap Room River Ranch and shake the hand of a, well, world record holder right now. We're going to catch up with Mondo. Excited about that and talk all about the Born to Fly documentary. Stick around. I promise you don't want to miss it. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're live at the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
Our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the Delta Media Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour two of three underway. And we've got world class in the building today at the Tap Room River Ranch. You know that means it's not just me. We've got some great guests that are here. Ben Love with you, hanging out at the Tap Room River Ranch. Glad you're joining us on 103.7 The Game. I am joined now by Armand Mondo Duplantis. He is the world record holder in the pole vault. That is fun to say. Also with us as we run the three-man weave, Brennan Robidoux. He spent the last 3 years shooting a documentary that in the next 5 to 6 months will come out, Born to Fly, all about the exploits of Lafayette High's own Mondo Duplantis. Gentlemen, it's great to have you here. This was really cool. Thanks for joining me now that you're back in the States.
I appreciate you.
Thanks for having us.
All right, so let's start, Mondo, with you. It began with 6.17 meters in Poland at the Orland Copernicus Cup. A week later, you upped your ante, literally, 6.18 meters at the Mueller Grand Prix in Glasgow, Scotland. Did you have those targets in sight going into those meets?
Yeah, well, I felt really good going into the indoor season. I had a really good fall training, and, you know, I was expecting big things, but world record just, I don't know, even to me, and I have really big expectations of myself, it almost sounded just a little too big to be planning on and kind of banking on. But, you know, so I wouldn't say that this whole indoor season, you know, breaking the world record twice was super, super surprising, but it wasn't the most expected. It's just kind of somewhere in the middle of those two.
I always hear from some of the most elite dunkers in the world that you wouldn't believe what we did in practice. Sometimes we're able to pull it off in front of people. Is that something that you had done behind closed doors before?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. For me, if I can jump anywhere near, you know, 6 meters in practice, I jumped 6 meters one time. That was about a week before I shipped off to Europe for the indoor season. And after I jumped 6 meters in practice, I thought I was close to in shape for the world record. So almost 20 centimeters difference. And, yeah, for me, I'm not even close to what I am when it comes to competition time. I don't know if it's the adrenaline or, you know, just the spotlight or what it is, but yeah, no, people ask me that all the time if I've jumped even higher than the world record in practice, but never even came close.
Brennan Robidoux also with us. You're shooting the documentary, a graduate of St. Thomas More High School right down the road here in Collie Saloon.
Indeed.
What was that moment? First in Poland and then in Scotland. What was that like for you? I have to imagine, like the rest of the world, you were just in awe.
Sure, yeah. I mean, it was one of those things where in the beginning when I first started the documentary, you know, it was 3 years ago, Mondo was 17, and I had this sneaking suspicion that this guy had the potential to be one of the best, if not the best in the world, which is kind of why I embarked on the journey. But, yeah, I mean, as you can imagine, that moment was absolutely incredible. It was like this moment I've been waiting for 3 years. And he did it, and it was such a great jump, and it was a great moment with his mother, and then later on in Glasgow when he did it the second time, another great moment with his mother. So, yeah, I mean, it was incredible. I have no words, really.
So right now this is the run-up to Tokyo and the Olympics that are coming up this summer. You get some prestigious moments, right? You get to go to some really cool places, but it isn't always like that. Brennan, I want to get your perspective. I read the story that was in the newspaper. Some of the places that you've stayed as you continue to chronicle this man.
Yeah, well, I mean, for the first couple of years, I was sleeping on Mondo's floor in most of his hotel rooms. You know, I mean, he was an amateur athlete when I first started. He was in high school. And then he was a collegiate athlete. So even though he was competing in these really amazing and prestigious events, he wasn't making any money. He was an amateur athlete. And so, you know, I was self-funding the documentary, still am, throughout this entire process. And so to save some money, I tapped into whatever resources I had. And most of that was, hey, Mondo, can I stay on your floor? If there's an extra bed, can I stay in the bed? And he was gracious enough to let me for the last 3 years. He's probably tired of it by now.
No, it was all right. I mean, it was usually, yeah, I mean, sometimes. But it was usually just me and my father in the room. And, you know, I mean, me and my father, if we're just alone, like, you know, just me and him, we'll probably just kill each other. So, yeah, I mean, we were always welcoming company. And me and Brennan, ever since the beginning when we started doing it in, you know, March of 2017, we hit it off and really, you know, not only was he doing this documentary on me, we kind of just became friends. So, you know, to me, it wasn't really somebody sleeping in the same room as me that was, you know, had a camera on me the whole time. It was kind of more just a friend of mine.
Brennan, tell our listeners about the ultimate cold call of your life.
Sure. Yeah, so it was March 2017, so literally right at 3 years. And, you know, my parents had actually competed at LSU alongside his parents on the track team. And so I'd always known of the Duplantis family. I'm closer to Mondo's older brother's age. So, you know, I always knew of them. And when Mondo had jumped, it was 5.82 meters, just over 19 feet. He became the first high schooler to jump over 19 feet. Kind of made the national press and obviously the local press. And I realized this is, you know, this is a documentary that is in the making right now. And I live literally right next to Lafayette High. He goes to Lafayette High. There's no reason as a filmmaker I shouldn't be taking advantage of this. So I got Greg's, Mondo's dad's number, and just called him. And he said, well, you got to ask Mondo. That's not something that I can, you know, agree to or not. So he gave me Mondo's number. I shot Mondo a text. You know, he's 17. He prefers text messages over phone calls. And I texted him this long message kind of explaining this whole idea. Man, I want to follow you all the way from now into the Olympics. It's going to be this big documentary. It's going to be awesome. And I'm not joking. His exact response was, I mean, I guess. And I took that hesitancy and just ran with it. And before long, I was showing up at every practice at Lafayette High. And then really not long after that, I was flying around the world filming them.
Absolutely incredible. And I still remember the first time that Mondo and I sat down for an interview at the Beaver Club Relays a couple of years ago. You talk about liking to text. That's what he texted me after. He's like, look, I need you to send me that interview. It's not for me, but my grandfather would love this. He would go nuts about this. So.
Oh, he's listening to it right now, no doubt about that.
What did the year in college do for you, Mondo? You spent a year in Dennis Shaver's program at LSU. How did it help you?
It helped me in a lot of ways being in college. You know, coming out of high school, I had a rare opportunity that not many track and field athletes have, and that would be to turn professional and, you know, sign a shoe deal, do it, do as I please, and, you know, kind of compete on the European circuit. And that's pretty rare for a track and field athlete, especially coming out of high school, because, you know, there's not too much money in the sport. But, you know, I was grateful to be in a position to where I was good enough to where if I wanted to, I could do it. But my parents, especially my father, he really, really wanted me to go to LSU, at least for a year. And, you know, just kind of get the base in. And it's the best place to train, I think, in the country. Has the best facilities there is. So I knew that if I was to go there for at least a year, then I'd be able to use facilities, you know, as long as I want. And Coach Shaver knew that. He agreed to that after the first visit. And, yeah, it was just good, I think, for me just as a man, just to grow up and live on my own for a bit, because, I mean, I was still in high school. I was living with my parents, and so I think it was good to have a year where, you know, I take some responsibility for myself and, you know, just try to figure some things out in my life, not only on the track but off the track.
Your dad, Mondo, has been quoted as calling you hard-headed, maybe even extremely hard-headed. How does that help you get the heights that maybe you didn't think even you could reach?
Yeah, I guess ignorance can be a bliss sometimes. I'm hard-headed. I think the biggest thing is pole vaulting, because ever since such a young age, I don't know what it was. I've kind of just been a student of the event, and I've always kind of thought I knew sometimes even more than I do know. And me and my father, you know, two kind of powerhouses when it comes to our brains and pole vaulting, will just clash
all the time, it seems like. And, I think it was good in the sense of I always thought I could do these things that people didn't think I could do. I always thought I could achieve anything in pole vaulting because, you know, I just had these high expectations of myself and this super-duper confidence and this, you know, this particularly unique event that I was studying and that I was really just a student of. And, I think you have to be just a little bit crazy to do what I do. And, you know, a lot of people, the mental side of it, you know, being scared of the event is a big downfall for people. And for me, I think that's kind of the reason why I've risen to where I am today is because I wouldn't say I'm necessarily just a daredevil, but just when it comes to pole vaulting, I'm so comfortable doing it that, you know, it doesn't feel like I'm doing anything scary. I'm just out here just riding a bike, really.
Brendan, could he do all of this if it weren't for the family environment that you've witnessed him, that he grew up in? And it's not just the older brothers, not just the parents, but also the younger sister who's a junior at Lafayette High, ultra competitive as well. Would he be this today without them?
From my perspective, what I've heard, at least, you know, through the 3 years is, as Greg would say, you know, Mondo jokes around that he's now a better jumper than his father was whenever, you know, he jumped the same height that his dad's PR was when he was 17. His dad says, yeah, well, I wasn't coached by a 19-foot jumper. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Mondo definitely has the benefit of being coached by an incredible pole vaulter in his own right, as well as having a physical trainer and his mother, who's just one of the, you know, a fantastic athlete and physical trainer. And then, of course, he's the youngest boy in the family, so he had two brothers growing up that they were just always competing in the backyard. And, you know, I've discovered all these old videos and stuff of them. And you know, Mondo's out there as the 6-year-old competing with his 11-year-old brother, and he's jumping the same kind of things that they're jumping. So he was getting that experience from way earlier age than almost anybody else. And so, yeah, I would say for sure it definitely led to, or at least was a factor in helping of how good he is today.
Before we hit our first break, how do people react to Mondo internationally at events like we just discussed?
Yeah. It was always pretty crazy. Obviously, track and field is really big in Europe. And so Mondo being an incredible track and field athlete means that he's like one of, you know, a superstar basketball player, football player here. But the last 2 weeks since he's broken the world record, it's gotten to a level that's almost insane. It's pretty crazy.
I want to talk more about the documentary Born to Fly, the Kickstarter campaign where people can continue to make this thing better and better. We'll get to that, and I want to ask you about Antoine. I know that he's at spring training right now, so we'll figure out what comes next for your older brother and the former LSU baseball player, upstaged by Coach O to throw the first pitch of the first game this season. We'll talk about that and more. Stick around. We're coming right back. Mondo Duplantis joining us alongside Brendan Robidoux. And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live from the Tap Room River Ranch.
You've been working all day just to make it to your daily fix of Ben Love.
Boy, does that say something about your life choices.
But since you want it, let's get back to more Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
And welcome back to the Tap Room River Ranch. My pleasure for the next few moments to be joined again by Mondo Duplantis and Brendan Robidoux. One of them has now twice in the last month set the world record in the pole vault. Of course, the other is filming the documentary, Born to Fly. What did I say? I did something wrong, huh?
No. He just looked at me. We were just kind of laughing.
Yeah, well, one of them broke the world record. One of them did not break the world record.
He did. He's doing the other thing. Yeah,
yeah.
That's true.
Yeah,
all
for
right.
Sure.
No, okay. Well, look, that's why you do what you do, man. You have a keen editing eye, so
we've
got to make sure we have you on board. And before we get back to the doc, you broke your idol's record, and that just had to be surreal in so many ways. I'm going to give this a go because you gave me confidence in the break, but Renaud Lavillenie.
Perfect.
From France. You broke his world record, and then later you attended an event, a pole vaulting-only event, mm-hmm. that he hosted in his hometown of Clermont, France. Tell me about your relationship with him and his response since you've done what you did.
So, Renaud Lavillenie, world record holder, he broke it in 2014, but he was dominating pole vaulting ever since 2009. So ever since I was 9 years old, which was, you know, some of the heart of my pole vaulting, And so, yeah, ever since I can remember, he was the king of pole vaulting. And I met him in 2013 at this event one time, just as a fan. And I met him briefly, and then the next time I met him was 2017, and I was competing against him. It was my first professional meet in Eugene, Oregon, at the Prefontaine Classic. And I was 17 years old, junior high school, and he was still kind of dominating. I wasn't quite at his level yet, but I was kind of an emerging elite in the event. And yeah, he's been a great role model to me, kind of like a big brother, and he's kind of taken me under his wing. The past couple summers now, I've been to his hometown in Clermont Ferrand, where he holds my last event that I competed at. And yeah, I go there, train for a couple weeks or so out of every summer now. And yeah, good, kind of like a training partner, big brother, friend of mine, competitor, rival, all these things mixed in one. And you know, it's crazy to think that the guy that I was looking up to when I was 9 years old, you know, him being the, you know, whatever you want to say, LeBron James of pole vaulting, is now, you know, a good friend of mine. It's crazy. And now I take his world record from him. It still doesn't feel real. You know, I saw him a week after I took the world record, and you know, it still felt like he was the world record holder. It didn't. I don't know if it still has. It hasn't really sunk in yet to where, you know, to him, to me, he's still kind of like the king.
You know what's interesting? You came in here wearing the Puma gear, and so I asked you in the break, you represented by them? Yep, absolutely so. And you mentioned Red Bull and Omega as well. So many people listening to this program wondered, a couple years ago, you had the opportunity to go pro right out of high school. Rare for an athlete in your sport. And it was always kind of tossed around, what are the sponsorships like for that? Well, here you are, 1 year out of college. Now you're a professional, and already these three major international sponsors. I don't know if it's validation of any sort for you, but what do you make of the fact that you're able to maybe blaze a different trail for athletes coming behind you?
Yeah, it's super surreal because, you know, growing up as a pole vaulter, you know, you don't expect fame or money or anything of that sort. I really love the event, and I want it to be the best that I can be. I want it to be the best ever. And, you know, people, they don't really understand, I guess, what being a professional in track and field and specifically pole vaulting really is. And they have a circuit called the Diamond League meets in Europe. It's this circuit of 10 or so meets, and that's kind of the professional league and tour. That's about the only way you can really make money in track and field. And yeah, you have to have partnership deals and sponsorships of apparel or watches or a drink company. And you know, like you said earlier, Puma, Red Bull, Omega, these are some pretty freaking cool brands. So you know, for me growing up, you know, sitting here now, it's kind of surreal because it sounds really cool. You know, me just being some pole vaulter and then all of a sudden have all these things.
It doesn't sound really cool. It is really cool.
It is cool.
Indeed.
It is cool.
Indeed.
I agree.
Brendan, I'll kick it over to you. A little bit more on the documentary. I guess the timing of the Olympics that are scheduled for this summer in Tokyo, the coronavirus may or may not have something to say about that, but how that maybe determines when this documentary will be released, and then especially how our listeners can get involved to help this thing get to the finish line.
Sure. Okay, so as I was saying before, I started the documentary in 2017. You know, I had a hunch that this kid had the potential to be something really big, and that I thought that this sport of pole vault was really cool and potentially a little bit underappreciated, and I kind of saw the opportunity that Mondo could bring track and field and pole vault to the mainstream. He just had that personality, and he had that skill set that he was really making it cool. And so I self-funded this documentary for the last 3 years, my wife and I. And that's been, I don't know, something like 8 European trips, been to 9 or a dozen countries, something like that, over the past 3 years. And it can get kind of expensive. And so I put together a Kickstarter campaign. And I'm really kind of calling on the Acadian audience, Louisiana audience, people that have been really supportive of this story. Obviously, they've been following Mondo for a long time, to consider contributing to it. Kickstarter is a way that they can contribute in exchange for a reward. So, for example, you know, for the $25 contribution, they get to stream the film early. $50 gets the stream of the film and their name in the credits. And it goes up from there. There's tiers of different contribution levels that they can choose from. Things like first edition signed posters by me and Mondo that's going to be a limited printing. So, you know, there's some cool things in there. You definitely get something for your contribution. But you know, it's also a way for the Acadiana people, for the Louisiana people, to really show that they support this documentary, and it'll bring Lafayette to an international audience. You know, I mean, this Mondo has superseded the sport and the community, and but he always remembers where he came from, and so Lafayette and all that will be really presented well in the film, and it'll be cool to bring that to the to international audience.
Mondo, one of your older brothers, Antoine, was a 12th round pick of the New York Mets last year. What's the latest on him? Aside from being upstaged by Ed Ogeron, Mondo got to throw out the first pitch at LSU. Second game of this season. What's up with Twani now?
Yeah, Twani is heading Sunday to Port St. Lucie, Florida for spring training. And I don't know everything about how the major league, you know, the minor league farm system works. But I think from there, I guess depending on how he does, he just gets sent somewhere, whether it's low A, high A, whatever it is. And, yeah, I think... I don't even know what the two cities that he might get. Maybe it's like, I think it's like Syracuse or South Columbia or something like that. And
I saw somewhere Brooklyn Cyclones. They may claim him as well.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think that was the team he competed, or team not competed. I'm just thinking of me. The team he played for last year. It was like a. I think it's kind of one of those things that, you know, college players, since they already played half the year in college, they only get that little half year in pro ball. It's like a summer league kind of thing. Just like a rookie season ball. And so I don't think he'll go back to Brooklyn, but I think now it's kind of more like the single A, double A kind of that grind.
So for our listeners that want to know what's next, I've already kind of dangled that carrot out there. It's the Tokyo Olympics. What happens between now and then? I know some of it's up in the air.
Yeah, I just have my normal, you know, professional competitions. I was supposed to have two meets in China beginning of May, so... coronavirus might be interrupting those plans a little bit, and then might have one in May in Tokyo, but coronavirus might also interrupt them, and then meet in Stockholm. Eugene, Oregon, I think is probably going to be my only competition in the United States for the entire year, early June, and then Stockholm, Paris, London, and I think maybe one more. I don't know where yet, but one more, and then, yeah, well, August 1st is the qualifying round for Tokyo, so be there like 2 weeks before for like a little training camp.
Do you strategize, Mondo, or ever dream about what else is possible? Do you allow yourself to think that way, or is that not how you're wired? You don't think about 6.2. How does that work for you?
I don't know. At this point, since, you know, I already broke the world record, so I have the world record. So I think for me the most important thing is the championship meets and, you know, bringing back medals. So for me now, since I already broke the world record this year, you know, if I can come away with the gold in Tokyo, I think that would be really, you know, the best way to really cap off this season. Because, yeah, I mean, you can jump as high as you want in whatever competitions, but, you know, if you can't get it done in the big moment, in the big championship meet like the Olympics, then I think it kind of just takes away from your resume a little bit. So I want to get it done there in the Olympics, and that's the most important goal as of right now.
Brennan, on our way out, one more time for the listeners, where they go on Kickstarter to help contribute to this awesome documentary?
Sure. I mean, they can go to Kickstarter.com and just type in Born to Fly, and they'll find it. But I think another easy way to do it is there's an actual website for the documentary, BornToFlyFilm.com. There's a big Learn More button. Just click the button, and it'll take you straight to the Kickstarter. And if they so choose, they can make a contribution. And we have an ambitious goal of $100,000 because, you know, making a documentary is expensive. Licensing the footage from the biggest meets and his stuff is expensive. So we got to hit it or we don't get any of it and all the money gets returned. So we're hoping we can hit that goal. We got 21 days left.
An historic project, 3 years in the making. Guys, best of luck. Continued success. I look forward to catching up again.
Thank you for having us on.
Mondo Duplantis, Brennan Robidoux, and I'm Ben Love. We got to land this plane momentarily. We'll be right back in. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live from the Tap Room, River Ranch.
You're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love. Missed an interview?
No!
Acadiana Sports Station has got you covered.
Explain how.
Just head over to 1037thegame.com and check out the on-demand section.
Woohoo!
Now back to Ben Love and to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game.
And welcome back out to the Tap Room River Ranch. That was a lot of fun. How cool having Mondo Duplantis back aboard, Brennan Robidoux, and why don't I keep this conversation going for a little bit, because as much as we fit into 30 minutes, I could have kept those guys on for the next half hour. We really didn't get a ton into what comes next and some of the how-tos behind getting this documentary produced and ultimately released. And that was a fascinating conversation we had off air. So, yeah, as we're back on, I'm going to bring it to air. And you're welcome to call in, chat about what you just heard. 706-0111. First, there's the condensing of materials. And Brendan shared with me that there's some 600 hours that he currently has. So during 3-plus years now of following around not only Mondo, but his father, the family, going to 9 to 12 different countries, he estimated, the meets all over planet Earth, and 600-plus hours right now. And this thing could well go to and maybe even through the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo. So you and I could probably surmise there may be 7 to 750 hours that he's got to whittle down. And the ideal runtime of this thing is going to be about 2 hours long. Brennan shared with me that part of the next step is getting this thing attached to the right producer. And then from there, finding the right place to sell it. Once he condenses it, once he finalizes it. And from there, who knows? I think the most likely format is a feature film. That's why it's being called the Born to Fly film. But he didn't rule out the possibility, hey, if this thing flies high enough, kind of like Mondo, who knows? Netflix, somebody like that purchases this. It's not impossible that this thing could be done and chopped up into episodes. And it could be episodic in format. Incredibly intriguing. And then it starts to get way above my pay grade. And, Clint, if you thought I didn't know much about the mechanics and the technical nature of how to pole vault at a world-class level, if you thought that that was me having a very low knowledge base, me knowing how to get something executive produced and sold to Netflix or maybe even to TV outlets in France or in Sweden, as Brennan suggested was possible, that is way out of my league.
Yeah, that is definitely out of my league, a lot like Mondo Duplantis' ability with a pole vault. That is just some world-class work to get that done.
How cool was that, by the way? You and I counted before the show. I think this is the fourth time that Mondo's been on with us, but how cool was that given what he's done in the last couple of weeks?
It's absolutely amazing we were able to get him on, especially live. Like, you can about imagine the man has just probably got a calendar booked up till God knows when, not just for appearances and everything in between, the practices he's got to take care of. Just thinking about the man's schedule and being able to take time to get back stateside with Brendan Robidoux and talk about all this live at the tap room, that's damn near Herculean effort, a lot like maybe what Brendan Robidoux is trying to do, getting this thing going on Netflix, Hulu, whatever he's going to try and hit up.
Well, I'll tell you a few things in response to that. One, you know, Mondo just so great with people. He's here shaking hands right now, and a lot of people have come out to, you know, catch a glimpse of world class. And so that part is fun to watch. I mean, even at 20 years old, he kind of gets that and plays to that role. But, you know, the second thing I would tell you, it's amazing what we don't think of when it's not our life. And here's what I mean. Sometimes we'll get water that comes up to a high level, and we worry about flooding, and we worry about some of those fun things here in southwest Louisiana. I never even remotely thought about this man's path toward the Olympics, which he's been working toward his whole life, and the effects that the coronavirus could have on that. So that's what I mean when I say, hey, if it's not our life, we don't always really consider some of the obstacles. Because Mondo told me, I believe prior to our opening segment today, there are two different meets in China and then one in Tokyo, not the Olympics, but a separate meet. He had planned to use those three combined as kind of his real lead up to the actual Olympic Games. But because of the coronavirus, yeah, he said it's all very much so up in the air. And if that's the case, he said he'll be here stateside. Maybe some things he has to go do in New York and other places, which is as much promotionally said than anything else. But it's interesting. He qualified for the Olympics last year. That's not a concern at this point. It's all about getting to gold. And that's really where he's at now. Didn't necessarily set out to break the world record. Or let me rephrase that. Set it and then break it. See, I got Brennan's correcting in my ear right now. I'm glad he did that. He didn't set out to do those things, but he has. And so now what's left for him? it's like any athlete. Most of them compete in team sports, and so we get how they can help a team win gold, but that's where Mondo's at right now. How can the team win gold? And he competes for Team Sweden. You know that, and I know that. But that's where he's at with this now. How can I get this thing to where I bring home gold in the Olympics? But it's crazy. We don't think about some of the obstacles that could prohibit him from getting there. And in this case, the coronavirus, the thing that maybe here in Southwest Louisiana, we say, eh, I wonder how that's affecting the stock price. Well, it's a little different for him as he's trying to go out and achieve at the highest level. All right, CD, before we hit our final break of hour two, interesting numbers. You could say eye-popping numbers that just came to us from the combine in Indy. LSU receiver Justin Jefferson just blazed a 4.44 40. Wow. And that is only going to further baby Jefferson's cause of maybe ending up a first-round pick. Come on, Saints, do the right thing. Loomis, Ireland, Payton, don't bleep this up. Justin Jefferson belongs in a Saints uniform. Give him the fleur-de-lis. Everybody can yell hoot at him, and he'll line up next to Michael Thomas for the next 7 to 10 years. A 4.44 40-yard dash for Justin Jefferson. Very interesting. All right, we are going to hit that final break of our 5 o'clock hour. Stick around. Even on a beautiful day like this, we'll still find a little shade to throw. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're live from the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
In sports, truly great duos stand the test of time. Montana and Rice, Michael and Scotty, Stockton and Malone. For your drive home, we've got Ben and Clint. Well, that'll have to be good enough. Back to more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Having some fun, and we got more of that to go around. With you until 6:30, this is Bumper to Bumper Sports live from the Tap Room River Ranch. We're going to let you hear from LSU football great Jacob Hester right before we exit stage left. And then we will dump you right into the PMAC, LSU Vandy women's basketball. Clint, tip-off is at 6:30. We're going to let our listeners dive right into the action. And right now, depending on your viewpoint, maybe fortunately, unfortunately, Nikki Fargus' team playing a little better than Will Wade's team. So we'll let you hear LSU Vandy women's basketball on Acadiana Sports Station. Again, 6:30 tip-off. We'll take you right up to it. Before we could do any of that, I get to issue my daily reminder to you that you can and you should brighten your day with some shade from the Patio Center. Go to their website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the cypress accents. And know that it's much more than just the inventory. Mark and company, like they recently were able to do for one of my family members, they'll sit down with you, and they'll help you create a vision. And then the collaboration, it's going to give you the best patio game on your block. I can guarantee that. Again, the only way you start is by going to the website, patiocenter.com. They are the kings of customization, and it's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
Well, if it's not banging on trash cans, apparently it's something else in Major League Baseball. The next example, the Baltimore Orioles. Blaring fake crowd noise. Say that a few times and good luck on it. But the O's getting ready for spring training. They're running out fake crowd noise during pop-up drills. And, Clint, there's absolutely nobody in the stands. So to say that it's obvious that it is altered sound at the stadium would be an understatement. Does that remind you of anything, though, fake crowd noise?
Oh, it definitely reminds me of one thing, and one thing in particular I think many Saints fans could definitely agree with. When you watch the Saints-Falcons face-off in Mercedes-Benz Stadium, which is dumb to begin with, but we got to say there's a lot of fake crowd noise going on every time these two teams play, because honestly, That place is not even probably three quarters full. This ain't a soccer game over there where they got a good bit of crowd over that over those games.
Yeah. Pretty incredible. Using the fake crowd noise. We're catching it in the NFL. Now it's spreading to spring training. Look, it's obvious that spring training's not going to attract big crowds. You don't need to fake the funk on that. Baltimore, nobody's looking forward to your season anyway. Just go quietly into that MLB night.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
Might have to point the thumbs back at myself, Clint, with some post shade. I could throw some at me, right? We're not immune to that on the program. I had to get in and take some cool pictures with Brendan and Mondo while they were here. And the lighting can be a little bit tricky at the tap room. It's a bar, after all. This isn't a photo op place. And so we took a few, and they're pretty good. But the 1037 The Game pull-up banner wasn't behind it. I said, you know, we need some with the station in there. I don't know that you could draw a cartoonish cowlick on a human being that would be any more cartoonish and real than mine was in that picture. So I might just say to hell with it and go ahead and throw that over all the 1037 socials. But one of the best... I've been wearing a headset for the last 2 hours, cowlicks that a human being could ever ask for.
Oh, and trust me, I think we know that feeling all too well, Ben. Like, right after I kind of get out of here, out of the game studios, my hair is just an absolute mess.
All right. So, you know, bring in a world record setter and holder in anything. Just happens to be the pole vault for Mondo. And, well, apparently my hair doesn't want to cooperate, so we could have this great storybook picture. Might have just blown – look. The biggest takeaway here, Clint, I might have just blown my chances at being the voiceover guy for the Born to Fly documentary, right? I could have been the Leif Schreiber. That guy, by the way, I didn't realize that until I read about it in the last couple of months. I think I'm saying his name right, but you know what I'm talking about. Leif Schreiber apparently does so many of the NFL films voiceover work. I had no idea why. And they've even rattled off the ones he's done, and I'm like, I've seen, like, all those because they're incredible. NFL Films is the jam. Had no idea it was him the whole time. So here I could be making a living doing all those things. Nobody would have to know it's me. They would just give me the royalty checks. But instead I do radio with you for 3 hours every day.
Hey, I got all you got to do is just ask. You know, you got to shoot your shot in 2020, Ben.
Might have to. Might have to hit Brennan up on the other side of this segment. If he says yes, I'm not doing the final 30 minutes of this show. But if it's no... The upshot is that I will do the final half hour. So, you know, it's an all-in proposition. Hey, my man shot his shot, right? We talked about the cold call of his life while they were on, so I might have to make that myself. You looking for a guy that gives you a great baritone and probably can get him relatively cheaply? Because Clint's willing to do it. No, I'm just kidding. So, anyway, it's on the table. We'll see exactly where it goes. We gave you the news in our last segment. In case you're just joining us, Justin Jefferson blazed a 4.44 second 40-yard dash within the last 20 to 30 minutes. I mean, just huge eyeballs emoji, amigo. That is enormous. And Justin Jefferson is, you know, not afraid of doing a little bit of self-promotion. Not going to begrudge him that, but my point is this. He told reporters he was going to shock the world prior to going to the combine. 4.44 in the 40, that would pretty much justify and back up everything that he foretold. That's huge. And I'll tell you what else is funny too. Sometimes the things that happen off the air might be better than what happens on air, Clint. While we were sitting there taking pictures and just messing around in between the break, Mondo was watching the combine. I'm sure this guy doesn't get to take in a ton of TV. And he just asked me, he's like, are people really not going to throw? Are people really not going to work out? And I said, yeah, guys like Joe Burrow are just kind of going to let their tape and their resume speak for itself. And he kind of begrudgingly accepted it, but the idea of, wait a minute, you wouldn't go compete when everybody else is? Like, what the hell is this? It was pretty funny to watch that. And then he asked me about Justin Jefferson. I'm guessing it's right before the youngest Jefferson ran his now famous 40, but you know, I told him, I was like, well, a lot of guys like that may wait until their pro day to at least go running routes and catch balls because they want to work with their quarterback, the guy they know. They don't want to have the biggest interview and audition of their life be with some Jocko quarterback from Washington State that they met 2 hours before in the waiting room. And he said, all right, that kind of makes sense. But he's like, he is going to run, right? I'm like, oh, yeah, he's going to run. So there you go. Mondo, if you're still listening, he ran pretty darn fast. Maybe not quite as fast as Mondo did. First time we interviewed him was right after he won the 100 meters at the Beaver Club Relays against some really, really, really good competition that's still running collegiately right now. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't think a guy like that worries much about what he runs the 40 in, but I know Justin Jefferson has done it in under 4.45 seconds, and it's only going to enhance his stock and only drive his range up toward being a first rounder. New Orleans, are you listening? All right, we are 2 hours down. We have 30 more minutes to go. When we return, I'm going to let you hear from Paul Maneri on the cusp of the Shriners Classic in Houston. That plus some interesting things that he had to say regarding Alex Bregman. We'll go to that and then the Bessemer interview Monday with Jacob Hester. Speaking of the combine, he's going to give you his interesting experience in Indy. So stick around. We're taking you right up to LSU Vanderbilt women's basketball. And, of course, this is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live from the Taproom River Ranch and only on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the Delta Media Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
So who do I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Rolling into hour three of three. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're at our Thursday safe place, the Taproom River Ranch. Glad to have you with us on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love here. And for the next half hour, joined by the famous Clint D from Inside the Game Studios. Here's the name of our game between now and 6:30. I want to get you ready for the Shriners Classic. LSU taking on Texas, Baylor, Oklahoma, all from the home of the Houston Astros. Going to let you hear what Paul Maneri had to say before the Tigers took off and went to Minute Maid. And then also what Maneri said today, just within the last 90 to 100 minutes ago, frankly, what he told reporters in Houston about Alex Bregman. It's all pretty interesting stuff. So we'll lead there. We're going to let you hear from Jacob Hester in our next segment. Some of his biggest takeaways from the combine. If his guy Phillip Rivers has anything left in the tank after leaving, not San Diego, but Los Angeles. And even his thoughts on the XFL. So that is how we're getting you all the way to LSU Vandy women's basketball. So we got a special airing of Nikki Fargus and the Lady Tigers at 6:30. But let's lead off again with CPM coach Paul Maneri. Tigers took down the CCD. It was LaTeX last night. There it is. 8-1, the final score in Baton Rouge. Had to recalibrate for a moment. And after the game, here's what Maneri said. The offense, different configuration. He liked it. Felt comfortable with it.
Performance tonight, you know, everything almost went exactly as planned, certainly with the pitching. You know, everybody did a super job and pretty much played out exactly the way we would have hoped that it would. It's nice to get off to a good start. We had some, you know, had some good things happen. You know, we executed a hit and run to advance the runner, and then we got a base hit to score him. It wasn't a great sacrifice bump, but we put a little pressure on him. They threw a ball away. We stole some bases. You know, I felt more comfortable with our offense tonight.
And they switched a few things around. Of course, there's one thing that's become a mainstay, at least since this past Friday, and that is Maurice Hampton in the outfield lineup. And this is Maneri on the dual sport athlete. His performance against La Tech, I think this just could be a sign of bigger and better things to come.
Maurice was amazing tonight. You know, some of those balls that he ran down in the outfield, you don't see that happen too often in college baseball. We're used to it here at LSU. We've had a history of great outfielders through the years. I could start rattling off names, but I'm sure I'd leave somebody out. And Maurice is right in that category. You know, he ran balls down in the outfield. He came through with two really clutch hits with two strikes on him with runners in scoring position. I thought he played a terrific game. So, you know, that combination of him and left and Giovanni in center. If Giovanni would have run that one ball down in right center field and went in for the double, I'd really be excited about the way that we played defensively. I thought Cabrera did a really nice job in right field. I'll tell you, that wind made it really tough tonight, and I thought our outfield played great.
Yeah, and some of those rangy, go-get-it outfielders that Maneri referenced but didn't enumerate. Look, a lot of those cats we know are from this area, huh? Jared Mitchell in our backyard, Andrew Stevenson in our backyard. It would be hard, though, to match the overall athleticism of Maurice Hampton. I get it. Mitchell was a first-round draft pick by the White Sox, won a national championship as a football player with Les Miles and company, but this Maurice Hampton's got a chance to be really, really special. I'm not sure yet I know what his true calling is. I believe, coming out of high school, most assumed it was baseball, that he was a no-doubt-about-it stud there. But, man, some of the things he showed, the flashes in year one as a safety, and now he gets more seasoning under Bill Bush, Corey Raymond. He's going to be legit back there. All right, let's take a few more from Paul Maneri. Here's what he had to say, and this is, again, last night after the win over La Tech. This is Maneri on LSU heading to the Shriners Classic.
We're all excited about it. You know, no, it's an early morning now. We're leaving really early in the morning, 7 a.m. bus departure. So, you know, the guys will, I'm sure, be sleeping on the bus. But we're going to go visit the Shriners Children's Hospital tomorrow afternoon, try to bring some joy to some kids that are facing some challenges in their life. We're going to go practice tomorrow night in the ballpark, in a big league ballpark, which will be exciting. And then, of course, Friday night we open up with Texas, which anytime it's Texas LSU, you know, that's going to, you know, get some people pretty excited. And I would expect there'll be a huge crowd there.
We've got one other clip that I want to air out. Again, this one's a little different than the last couple that you've heard. Those sound bites were Paul Maneri after LSU beat Louisiana Tech. This next one is from Mark Berman, Fox 26 in Houston. And look, he's there because he wants to get a soundbite from Maneri on Alex Bregman, and I don't blame him. He got a heck of a soundbite. I said it earlier when we aired this out for the 4 o'clock crowd. It's not a complete about face from Maneri, who told us on this show, I was hanging out at the tap room interviewing him in January. He told us on this show, he doubled down during LSU's media day and was staunchly behind Alex Bregman and saying, I know his character, he would have done this. I'll let you be the judge for yourself. But it's clear after you hear this that those two men have had a conversation and Maneri doesn't exactly see it the same way today.
Well, you know, I've talked, you know, privately with Alex about it, you know, a little bit. And, you know, it really hurts him. He feels a lot of remorse about a lot of things. But you have to remember, too, that when all that stuff happened, Alex had only been in the big leagues for 2 months. He wasn't really in a position to step forward and say, you know, I'm going to be different than everybody else. And I felt for the kid, you know, because it's always been important for him to be a part of the team and be accepted by his teammates and show respect to his coaches. And I just think he was kind of put in a tough position. And I can tell you right now that that's not Alex. Alex is not a person that looks for shortcuts. He's always done things the hard way. His work ethic, his, you know, commitment and so forth. And so, you know, he'll get through this. This is going to be a tough time for him, and it's going to be something that'll, you know, people will always remind him of. But I know what the character is of this young man, and he'll fight his way through it and try to win people back just by his sure dedication and love of the game.
It's interesting. I mean, really, that's a blanket term that can be applied to a lot of things, but there's really no other way to, I guess, off-the-cuff react to that. Because, again, Maneri, just look, this is like any, I guess, good marriage, right? A husband and wife. You could tell somebody, well, man, this is what your husband's accused of doing. This is what your wife's accused of doing. And you're like, nope, that's my person. I know them. They wouldn't have done that. You're wrong. There's no way you could be right. It's almost like that type of blind allegiance. So you're not going to catch me going in on Maneri on this show because there is a bit of an about face there. But it is clear, once you listen to that Bregman more or less said, you know, I kind of was indoctrinated into something that began before I got there. I was the rookie. What am I going to tell these guys? Okay. And so my biggest takeaway from that is that the players, even a guy as self-assured and confident, and you can take that to arrogant or cocky if you want, as Bregman is, even guys like that are starting to feel the heat a little bit from everything they're experiencing right now down at West Palm Beach. And they're starting to, I wouldn't say crack. I have no evidence of that whatsoever. But they're at least not immune to realizing that they goofed up. And that's good, because the free world's going to let them know about it every single time that they step to the plate and every time they step away from Houston, Texas. All right, we are going to step aside. One final timeout coming your way. Don't forget, after we're done, LSU versus Vanderbilt women's basketball. You want to come join us here? That'd be a good idea. Jones and Hollers laying down the sound with no cover charge from 8 until 11. You're listening to Bumper Sports live from the Taproom River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Right back in. What a day it's been. Going to be one heck of a night here at the Taproom River Ranch. A world record holder in the building. Pole vaulting phenom Mondo Duplantis. His documentary buddy, partner in crime for the last 3 years, Brennan Robidoux. That one's going to go down, I think, CD, in B2BS history. We had them here for a whole half hour from 5 to 5:30 and still buzzing a little bit from that. And unlike most people here, I have not had an alcoholic adult beverage. Still, the buzz is palpable.
Oh, the buzz is definitely there, Ben, regardless if you've had a drink or not. Just that interview was absolutely fantastic, and if you don't mind, I'm going to steal something from Barney Stinson. It was legend. Wait for it. Dairy. Legendary.
Yeah, we'll take that, and it's been that kind of week. Got to give a huge round of applause to our guests. We had Feezy K, Kevin Falk aboard yesterday, and of course, Monday on a Lundy Graw, Jacob Hester. While we've got some time now, don't forget LSU Vanderbilt women's basketball coming on the other side of our program. I want to run back the best from one of the original number 18s. Matt Malk was the originator, but this guy Hester, he was early in the line of succession. And I asked his general take on the NFL Combine. Of course, he went through that after coming through the turnstiles with less miles. But this is Jacob Hester on his experience at the NFL Combine.
I'll be honest, Ben, I wasn't a huge fan of the process. I think a lot of it's unnecessary. Now, I understand that they want to get their eyeballs on you. I understand they want to see you in person. They want to get the physicals, all those things, and they want to know how fast you are. Like, I get that. But there's so many things that I think are over the top when it comes to the NFL Combine. I'm a guy that never missed a game at LSU or in high school, and I was at the hospital for 9 hours getting, 37 different MRIs. And I think so much of it is mental. And the thing that I think that you can take the most from the combine, and what talking to GMs and head coaches, what they do take, is the one-on-one meetings. Now, I think those are important. They want to know, what do you know, right? They want to know exactly what your football IQ is. And I can remember walking into the room with Jack Del Rio when he was the head coach of the Jaguars, and he was trying to stoop me. Like, he wanted to draw up a run blitz that I could not counter what I would do in that situation. And I understand those things, right? And, to get a receiver in there, you want to see, okay, what's your favorite route? Okay, what's your favorite two-man route combination? Okay, well, if I throw this at you, if I'm playing robber, if I'm in bracket coverage, what do you do? What's your side adjust? And so they want to know your football IQ, and I do think that part is very important. But, the hand measurements. Look, I had the biggest hand of any running back in my class. I've got an 11-inch hand. I can't throw a football to save my life. Every time I throw a football, it looks like a wounded mallard duck is taking flight. And so I think hand size is so overrated. Joe Burrow never had a fumble in the pocket. His pocket presence is actually one of the best things that he does. and he always takes care of the football. So the fact that he has 9-inch hands means nothing to me. And I think we over-talk and just bring up points that don't really matter. Look, turn on the tape. Joe Burrow has multiple years of tape, and if you want to dissect those and get into those things, I understand that. But don't tell me, you know, his hand size is a red flag.
So, yeah, probably safe to say that Jacob, not a huge fan of the Underwear Olympics in Indy. But let's take a couple more from Jacob Hester before we run out of time here. I asked, look, Jacob, if you're Joe Burrow, if you're any of these LSU offensive players that just set all kind of land speed football records, would you really work out if your tape was what theirs is? Would you work out? And here's his response.
I think it all just depends. As a quarterback, I understand why you could be reluctant, right? I've talked with former LSU NFL quarterback Matt Flynn so many times on our show about it. He's like, hey, you know, you're throwing to guys that you've never met before. You don't know how they like to come out of their break. And he'll tell you, look, some routes, they're easy. If you're running a 9 route, you're running a go, well, anybody can throw and pitch and catch that. But if you're running out routes, if you're running an 18-yard dig route, well, some receivers like to run out of the break. Some are choppy, right? Some like to chop at the top of that break. And you don't know that going in. And so it never really made, you know, a lot of sense to me to throw to guys that you don't know. And so I understand that point, and I understand there's some guys that have to go out there and try to prove themselves. The top guys always have, you know, the opportunity, I guess, to say, hey, I'm going to do it my pro day because I want to show you with the receivers that I have a rapport with. Because when I get to the NFL, they're going to have a rapport with those receivers, right? They're going to have OTAs and mini camps to learn each other, to learn this guy comes out of a break this way, this guy in an option route likes to do this. And so I think quarterback's always a little bit different.
Keeping it along the lines of real, actual, professional NFL football. And, yeah, Clint, that's a shot at the XFL. We'll talk about them here in a second. But Jacob Hester opined on his old buddy, Philip Rivers. Jacob even gives a little disclaimer here. The two are still T for tight, but Rivers won't be part of the, not San Diego, but Los Angeles Superchargers anymore. I asked if Rivers has enough in the tank to get the job done somewhere else. You might be surprised by the AFC team that Hester conjures up here.
Yeah, I think he can be. And that's not me just saying that because he's my friend. I think he still has something left in the tank. And, when you look at the San Diego, that's what I'm going to call them. Never going to call them LA, but when you look at the Chargers, their offensive line struggles were pretty bad the last couple of years. If you got to a team like Indianapolis, who has one of the best offensive lines in the NFL, I'd be very excited to what he could do with a team like that. So I think there's still some talent. We know there's a want. I mean, he's a guy that I once asked, you know, how long are you going to play? And he literally told me, until they drag me off. And so I know he wants to play. I know it's something that, still burns inside of him. So I hope a team like Indianapolis, who has a lot of skill already there, would like to pick up Philip, because I do think he can help a team. And I'll be intrigued where the Chargers go as well. I mean, you're hearing Tyrod Taylor. I don't know if that's going to actually be the truth. I think just putting that out there. But they'll probably draft a quarterback. Looks like Herbert maybe from Oregon. So it's going to be weird not seeing 17 back there for the Chargers.
One more from former LSU great Jacob Hester. All right, here's your moment in the sun, Clint. I did ask him about the XFL. Does it have staying power? Is there enough traditional off-season angst for more football that we just need it in our life? And well, I think you know how I feel, but this is how Jacob Hester feels about XFL 2.0.
I'll be honest with you, Ben. I mean, I've never been a guy who needed more football in the spring, but I've actually enjoyed the XFL. I think it's been a much better product when you look at the alliance was last spring. And, you know, I've said for a long time that the NFL is such a big revenue base that you would think that there'd be a want for a minor league system. But for, you know, the test of time, it seems like we only like our football at the highest level. And a lot of people say that college football is, in fact, your minor league system, and that's why it's so popular. But I think the XFL has brought something a little bit different. I think the broadcasts have been fantastic. They really made sure that they had, you know, a really good broadcast team to entertain you during these games. I think the product's been a little bit better. The rule changes have been fun. The offensive line play has been a little poor, but that's to be expected when you don't have a training camp. So does it work out 10 years from now, I don't know. But it is fun to see the lower bowl in St. Louis field. It's fun to see, you know, Dallas show when Seattle had 29,000 people their last home game. And so, you know, why not? Why can't a spring football league work and just satisfy us until we get to NFL training camps?
There you have it. The absolute best from one of the original number 18s. Heck of a show today. We got to give a round of applause and tip the cap. Hunt Palmer, his leadoff spot in the lineup every Thursday at 4:30, getting you ready for LSU and a westward trip to H-Town, taking on Texas, Oklahoma, Baylor. Hunt got you ready for that and did his best to tell you how disappointing LSU hoops was at Florida last night. And then, of course, Mondo Duplantis and Brennan Robidoux from 5 until 5:30. That's the way that we got it done on a Thursday. Glad we had you with us. Don't forget Jones and Hollers. They're taking over here from 8 until 11 tonight. No cover charge. You just start your weekend early in style. Jones and Hollers here from 8 to 11. They've got the new spring cocktail menu and the Lent flatbread coming next week right on time for all the Catholics out there. So for the famous Clint D, my name is Ben Love. You've been listening to Bumper Sports. Live from the Taproom River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.